This episode is presented by Tri-State Cadillac Dealers. Next up on the Renaissance Man podcast, we have rap and hip-hop icon Chuck D. Coming up, I talked to Chuck about the formation of the historic group Public Enemy. His memories of the time Ice Cube left in WA, and who he thinks is the future of hip hop as we celebrate 50 years of the music genre. Up next, Chuck D. Let's go. Hi, I'm Jalen Rose, and welcome to the Renaissance Man podcast, proudly presented by the New York Post. A show where we cover trends in fashion, entertainment, current events, and everything in between. Be sure to share this podcast with your friends, your coworkers, your partners, your siblings, your kids. Share it with someone that you know could use some of this good old-fashioned soul food. This week's theme is Be Who You Are. I talk a lot on this show about knowing yourself and using that to create great things. That's because so many successful people have come on this podcast and told me that one of the keys to their journey is to stay true to themselves. Be who you are, not who the world wants you to be. Your critics, your mate, your family, your friends, be who you are. Because when you accept yourself, you become empowered. You become invincible. And as we keep celebrating the 50th anniversary of hip hop, I'm excited to share a conversation that I had with someone I truly admire, who's voiced his truth his entire career. Chuck D. He's one of the most important voices in the history of hip hop and the culture. He's a rap pioneer, a music icon, and one of the founding members of the historic rap group, Public Enemy. Coming up, I talked to Chuck about the albums that made an impact on him, what he remembers about the Do the Right Thing Spike Lee era, and what's next for his career. Up next, Chuck D. It is my honor to welcome the incredible Chuck D to the Renaissance Man podcast. Good day, my brother.
How are you doing, man? Good to talk to you, YG legend.
No doubt. I appreciate the love. And I know that you've been busy. I got a chance to see you in Martha's Vineyard. The docuseries that you have out right now called Fight the Power, it's had me mesmerized. I done watched each episode like two or three times, and I can't wait to get into that. But I want to talk to you about your beginnings. You were 13 years old when hip-hop was born. Tell me about when you were first exposed to this music and what your life was like during that time.
I come from the New York area, New York metropolitan area, born in Queens, parents from Harlem, both of them. And when I came up in Queens, moving to Long Island at 9, so I'm a Long Islander because Quiet has kept Brooklyn and Queens all Long Island geographically. So I claim that and I own that. I wanted to be a sportscaster, Jalen. I wanted to be like Marv Albert. Matter of fact, I think I was going to be a Stuart Scott before the great Stuart Scott. Wow. I mean, have baseball, basketball, football statistics are all in me, man. I wanted to become a player, but I was first to admit that I sucked. No matter what, I wanted second baseman for the Mets or a point guard for the Knicks or whatever. You got to know your calling. And I knew that when I went down to the parks, I had a loud voice, so I used to bark it out, you know what I'm saying? Before hearing like all those cats on the sidelines of the Rucker, you know, I was like but I could be heard, you know. But that was my first call. And so when I seen hip hop come along in 1973 as a baseball fan, you know, that was the You Gotta Believe New York Mets coming from last place, the last New York Knicks championship year. You know, you know, I can't really speak on football because my team, the Jets, had won in 69. So I wanted to become a sportscaster. And I think Marv Albert was a key figure, as well as the baseball announcers, as well as, you know, black journalists like Art Russ Jr., who did sports talk back in the 70s, man. You know, and I wanted to be that. But when hip hop came along, you know, music was all in our background. Everybody has some music in their background. Music was a part of every black person's life. It was always somebody musical in it. If it wasn't church, it was the 45s. It was the AM radio stations. It was the way they brought it across on the radio. So that was a natural thing. And, you know, and I got, you know, grandparents on that side in Detroit, you know, so music was just like in the, it was, you talk about streaming, Jay, music was always streaming with us. You know what I'm saying? 1973 comes along. I was like, okay, I was interested in the technical aspect of hip hop and rap music. That wowed me. I mean, there was always bands that you knew and people knew instruments, but the fact that somebody could play a record and manipulate it and then do what Muhammad Ali did over it, that fascinated me. So that's when the hip hop bug bit me really when I was 16, 1976. My brother used to come in the room with it. I used to kick him out, you know, that type of thing in the room. But he was my introduction, along with my sister, into hip hop, 1976. So, yeah, it's been a long
crazy. And I just remember when Yo Bum Rush the Show came out, that just changed the landscape of music, and it just echoed in my ear when Flay said, "My man Chucky D." That boy swear he nice. Man, the boy don't swear he nice. He knows he's nice. You know what I'm saying? So, Chuck, I got a feeling you're turning to a public enemy, man. So can you talk to me about the formation of the historic group, Public Enemy?
Yeah, it was Yo Bum Rush the Show, which coincidentally they named Yo MTV Raps off of. Because actually we was like the first influencers of Yo MTV Raps overseas. That's where the show started. And Yo Bum Rush the Show was an influential record everywhere else in the world in our beginnings. And it was slow to climb in the USA, although some places got it. Places with car culture. Long Island is car culture. Me and Flavor used to drive the U-Haul trucks and other trucks delivering furniture for my pops as a part-time gig or whatever. So we would actually be in the cab of the U-Haul, or either he driving or I driving, talking about what we did. We come from a collective, Jalen, where Spectrum City, Hank Shockley, Keith Shockley, who you remind me of a whole lot, Flavor, myself, Bill Stephanie, who I met in college, who started WBAU. We come from a big collective. It was the collective before people actually saw Wu-Tang Clan. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, right.
So we was a collective from Long Island, outside of the five boroughs. And so Long Island is, 100 miles long, 28 miles wide, full of everything that's getting New York and actually going to go at New York. So we come from that collective, and Yo Bum Rush the Show was actually like, we're going to invade the music business. You know, like what it is, Jalen, you got a gig going on or event, and you with your homies, right? And there's 20 of y'all that can't get in. All you need is a toe in the door.
Correct. Bum Rush the Show.
Exactly. You know, and he was first. And the crazy thing is that we were in promotion, so we understood that from the other end, too, how to secure against that. That's where the security of the first world came in. Because we used to have the thing on the radio. We used to throw events. Also, we had security of first world. Also, we knew the thugs out there on Long Island, the 98 party, who were, I mean, it was different from Brooklyn and Queens. These cats actually would build cars, 98s, Oldsmobile Delta 88s.
Yeah, my 98, Oldsmobile.
Yeah, they were a gang. They were a car gang, man. It was like 12. You see 12 98s and Delta 88s coming at. And the thing is, was crazy back then. We used to put cars together.
Wow. Like,
you know, I had a Le Mans, man. Transmission went bad. I went to a took a stick, went to a hot on a hot day, went put it in the tar and tarred my transmission from leaking. That's how crazy we were all. Because in Long Island, man, there's no mass transit, especially back then, man. And right. No car, you stuck. I mean, same thing like in Detroit. You ain't wheeling, yep. Man. You stuck in the place. So it's
correct.
Car. Our music permeated and talked about car culture and just the thing how hip hop rotated around that. Run DMC came close because they the next borough over. That's why how Queens Cadillac was their thing.
Gotcha.
Cadillac, you know, DMC, right. You know.
I drive a caddy, you fixing a Ford.
Exactly. Exactly. Which my grandfather in Detroit worked for both companies.
When did you realize that your voice was one that became so prominent that we look to you for knowledge, wisdom, and information? Like, it was one thing the way you guys entertained us, and I've seen so many of you guys' shows with you, Flav, and the S1Ws, the discipline, the organization, the intellect, the professionalism, but also the historic bars that were teaching us about ourselves and teaching us about society and the culture. And in particular, that played out on an album, It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's simple. We were slightly older. I'm born in 1960, Hank 58, Flavor 59, you know, so we from that era. So we remember when there was a Dr. Martin Luther King on the radio.
Mm.
We don't remember Dr. King as a person that got shot only, and then we figured out how to pick up the pieces. We remember Malcolm X living, you know what I'm saying? Hearing small things as a child, man, seeing things on TV. We remember the Vietnam War, you know, like I told you when we were sitting down, Black Steel in the Hour of Chaos was a real thing with my uncles being drafted to Vietnam after high school. I mean, what we delivered and It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back is some real stories from a real time that I guess the next generations were born after, like those that were born in the 70s, they came after the 60s. We experienced the 60s. How could we bring it across and rap in the 80s? I mean, one time we were hanging a flyer, me and Hank and promoting Hank Shockley promoting the party. And we hung up a flyer with Malcolm X and this young cat said, "Who is Malcolm the 10th? And we said, "We got things to work on." He said, he thought he was Malcolm the 10th. You know, the X was a Roman numeral. So we used to do things, man, to say, okay, listen, I mean, if we 6, 7 years older than the kids out, we throwing parties or we should give them something, you know, up here. And that really, I mean, it made Long Island a center point for a while. I mean, it was a center point for such a long time is that I felt bad being part of Public Enemy because I knew we had to take it around the world. But what we were doing locally was like world changing. And like I grew up down the street from Eddie and Charlie Murphy. Dr. J grew up in our hometown.
Wow.
Bill Stephanie, Dr. Dre, you know, Andre Brown, Yo MTV Raps, Who's the Man? You know, he one of us, Harry Allen, man, we all in the same classroom in the Delphi. Delphi was a center point where everybody in Nassau County came to. You know, I mean, you know, in Detroit, there's always that college, like people would go up to Wayne State and just, you know, the black, you know, party night and stuff like that. Delphi was the same thing for us.
Wow, that's crazy. And also, I'm about to introduce a few things that people may not realize that your fingerprints and Public Enemy's fingerprints were game-changing in different arenas. So I want to talk about Spike Lee and the classic movie Do the Right Thing. You guys' video and soundtrack for Fight the Power became so very legendary as a visual for that movie that not only helped continue the greatness of Spike Lee's movie career, but also Spike Lee helped launch Michael Jordan's historic Air Jordan shoe through that movie. Can you remind people of those times of Do the Right Thing, Fight the Power video, and remembering how Spike Lee and Public Enemy played a major role in the popularity of the Air Jordan shoe?
Yeah, I mean, quite quickly, man, back in the day, you know, sneakers were sneakers. The pros wore them. Converse was the one that, hey, Dr. J had the Converse. Hey,
no doubt.
Hey, where you get those moves? And then later on, Bird and Magic, they wore Converse. So,
yeah.
And Nike comes along and they attract you. Because I ran track, so I remember Nike was a track shoe. But the Air Jordans was just like another great ball player wearing another shoe, you know? Was it street gear? I mean, Adidas, once Run DMC did Adidas.
Yep.
That was a hip-hop shoe. But Spike Lee takes the basketball prowess of Michael Jordan and teams him up with this Brooklyn Knight called Mars Blackman. Mars Blackman is a B-boy out of Brooklyn. And the movie, the black movie that She's Gotta Have It comes out, Mars Blackman is a key figure. Throw hip-hop, B-boy, Brooklyn, Mike Jordan's game, you know, the long shorts, you throw all that into a pot, and what do you get? You get credibility by default.
Yep.
And Mike had to do is keep on being Mike, right? I mean, Mike Jordan kind of popularized the ball head, you know? Even though Kareem had did it first. But I'm just saying is that all those things that pop, Spike Lee was making movies back when black folks wasn't making movies for a while or that level keying out to everybody. You remember back in the day when Spike Lee do a movie, everybody going to go.
No doubt.
You know what I'm saying? From Denzel to Wesley to whoever, you know?
Yeah.
Lynette McKee and whatever. They're going to honor Spike because Spike made those inroads. So long story short, 1989, after he had School Days in 88, he says, listen, man, I'm going to cop on this thing that's going on about the unrest in New York City. All these communities cheek to jaw with each other, but yet still some getting service better than others. We got to talk on that. And Black Talk Radio was the main thing in New York because it communicated to everybody. That's why in Do the Right Thing, you got Samuel Jackson. He's like the DJ in the beginning because that's how we were connected. And the whole thing about the anthem, Spike said, listen, I want to tie this together with hip hop, but it got to be y'all because this is the level where this is at. And he just said, I need an anthem. And it took us a while to come up with an anthem up to the title, Fight the Power. And it answered that. And even when people get into like, okay, yo, you talked about John Wayne and Elvis, not them specifically, but their whole American icon, they can't do nothing wrong. It's only them, nobody else. We answer to that because the biggest question Spike had in the movie was Giancarlo Esposito saying, yo, Sal, how come there ain't no black folks on the wall? And that's
correct.
What it was about. So, you know, in answer to that, and our thing is just like, how do we play the role with the momentum that's already popping? You know, and you know, just like everything is just like a sports game. You got to have people that know their role. You got to know their role and complement the momentum that's going that way. So our thing is like we could provide soundtrack to what you got. I mean, who knew that Spike was going to put the song in there 80 times? I mean.
Literally. And also something that changed the landscape of hip hop is when Ice Cube decided to leave NWA.
Yeah.
And that was clearly a pivotal moment in his career about what he was going to do next. And then all of a sudden he links up with you and the Bomb Squad, drops America's Most Wanted, one of the most classic albums in the history of hip hop. And he survived in a lot of ways what people thought was career suicide by leaving NWA. What do you remember about those days and that album?
We toured together. NWA admired us as a posse as opposed to the individuals. You see the NWA, the posse, they have a collection of groups. Matter of fact, they even wore clocks on the back dock of their cover.
Yep, they did.
And we toured together in 87, 88. had kinship. We were older than everybody else, Jalen. So everybody had looked at Public Enemy as mediators, cats mm-hmm. that was just trying to bring everybody together for the spirit of hip hop, whether you was, you know, Jazzy Jeff or Fresh Prince or you were King T. We were right. like, all right, listen, let's sit down. It's all of us together, man. This is all of us against the world to prove mm-hmm. that we are legitimate music. So we struck up a kinship. And when Cube had some issues with his situation, I encouraged him. I said, well, figure out how to work it out because it's important. Your statements are important. And you're a key writer and one of the great MCs, man. And the West needs you, you know. And they couldn't work it out. I said, well, there's a civil way of going about this. And therefore, the Bomb Squad took on America's Most Wanted when we had the time. I think the Bomb Squad was doing Bell Biv DeVoe's album, wow. Via Planet, and then America's Most Wanted, incorporating people like Sir Jinx. And Eric Vietnam Sadler and Sir Jinx had a kinship. So it's all about working together, Jalen. We all in this thing together, man. Even when you do a show, I tell people it's not just your show. It's minute one to the closer. It's important mm-hmm. that the closer check out the opener. And then, you know, we were the first group to actually come along Agreed. And do that and come up with a synergy. And when Cube did that and got through all the turbulence, it also showed that in a good and also in a bad way that soloists could also make it bigger than groups. And right. it was all it made record companies look at, okay, it's easier to negotiate or renegotiate
right.
with a person as opposed to a crew. I mean, they would look at people like X-Clan and they roll up into an office and say, we want this contract changed. And they looking at a room full of cats with unks and bones in their nose. They like, white folks were like, oh my God. They'd be like, well, if you're going to actually distribute rap music to black people in the world with a black face on it, you're going to have to deal with us in the contract room. So they found a way to use the solo thing in the favor of kind of like getting the heat off of their back or the right. black back for contractual situations. You see, that's already flipping in and they don't know what to do in the NBA right about now. They like, they want to say that that inmates are running the asylum on the low.
Right. But it's still a salary cap.
Right. They blame Jalen Rose and all you Fab Five guys for all.
Exactly.
They can't remove that out of their heads, man. It's like, man, as soon as those guys came along, everything changed. Welcome to the territory.
No doubt. And I appreciate the love. And as hip-hop turns 50, I have to ask you, because you were one of the first artists and groups to actively expand hip-hop around the world. You're still doing major shows with Prophets of Rage. Can you just acknowledge one of your favorite tours and some of the other artists that you performed with on one of your favorite tours of all time?
It's difficult. It's 116 tours, 116 countries over 38 years.
Wow.
I think on a big end, on a small end, we did a Hip Hop Gods tour in 2012. We traveled on two buses and we went to parts that people never went, and we hooked up a review. So the Hip Hop Gods review with your city mate Awesome Dre, X-Clan, yes. Righteous Teachers, Wise Intelligent, Schoolie D, Moni, yes. and we did the big thing in a very small, quaint review type of thing and performed together. And that was special because we went to small places. We would go to a place like Lincoln, Nebraska, and people would look at Schoolie D and say, I never thought I would see you in my real life, yo. I also would say that on a big scale, I mean, wow. Def Jam tour the first year, LL Cool J, Houdini, Dougie Fresh, Bia Rakim, Public Enemy, Stetsasonic. We shared the same bus. Out of that bus that we shared in 1987, it was us and Stetson Sonic, 13 people on a 10 sleeper bus, right?
Wow.
And the bus broke down. I mean, every time we go to Nashville, we got to get the bus fixed because that's where the buses came from at that time, Nashville. And today they come out of Florida. But yeah, out of that bus was It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back, In Full Gear by Stetson Sonic, and then the proteges from the DJ of Stetson Sonic, De La Soul with.
Ooh.
Out of that bus summer, three albums came out of that bus summer with us building, wow, connecting, climbing. You know, we getting 10 minutes, Stets getting 6 minutes. You know, we coming as rookies, man. So out of that comes three great albums, three of the greatest albums of all time. And I remember actually on that bus trying to figure out all summer long, man, how do I write this song, Bring the Noise? Because Bring the Noise is in the last lyric of Rebel Without a Pause. Bring the Noise, my time, step aside for the Flex Terminator X. So I wrote Bring the Noise later. Oh, I was trying to write it, but I already recorded Don't Believe the Hype, but we put it in the can because it was low for that year, and at that time we put it in the can because that was going to be the soundtrack to Less Than Zero. And then when we did Bring the Noise and I went overseas, it percolated in the States. I was like, oh damn, that one,
right?
But Don't Believe the Hype was in the can, and then we brought that out the next year as a lead single for Takes a Nation.
No doubt. And I appreciate you taking the time, but before I let you get out of here, I got a rapid fire segment, Chuck D, called Gone in 60 Seconds. Presented by Tri-State Cadillac Dealers. You ready to do this?
Ready, set, go.
And you talked about your love of sports and wanted to be a sportscaster. Can you acknowledge for me your favorite New York sports icon of all time?
Player or announcer?
Player.
Well, the longevity factor got Clyde Frazier. And I grew up as a Willis Reed fan, but Clyde Frazier is right there. So to me, it because Clyde is a fixture in our life as a ball player, a stylist, a linguist, and now a broadcaster, he's Mr. New York, straight out of Atlanta, Georgia, but he's Mr. New York, man, I mean, he's like the rapper's icon in ball, man, and he knows it.
No question. Which artist of today do you think represents the future of the rap genre?
Probably a woman.
Mm.
And probably Sampa the Great out of Africa. If I wanted to name somebody and really give cats the facts, Sampa the Great is probably the future of Lil Sims out of the UK. Sampa the Great is from not Zambia, but she can speak all kinds of different languages. She a woman. Women in hip hop are 33% of the in the world are 33% of hip hop in the world. So,
I mean,
as far as like bringing it down to contemporary, what we see around, there's so many coming out, but I think somebody that can spit different languages. That's like somebody with a handle that could go to both hands, shoot the tray, dunk.
Yep.
Like the Wimby of rap is probably going to be somebody who's multilingual and stuff like that. But, you know, you got people out there. I always name them like Substantial is dope out of DMV as an indie artist. You know, I like, you know, as far as OGs, the new OGs, Fat Joe is a new OG who's like,
yep,
really seriously. He's a conductor of somebody that people trust and they come to for the old work. And I know him as the YG, but he's an OG right now, you know, and and what Nas is doing is just, yeah, they do OG work. And then you got GOAT, LL Cool J. So this past weekend, you had Nas and his mass appeal at Yankee Stadium. You had LL Cool J last week with Rock the Bells.
Yep.
And then you had, you know, like KRS-One, you know, at Sedgwick, 15-20 Sedgwick. So a lot of cats is doing OG work, you know. And then women in hip hop. This is the year that Missy Elliott goes into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So we'll be there saluting, representing, and we'll be there in full support.
Always a wealth of knowledge. And you're like a human being that seemingly never sleeps. You narrate a podcast. Can you dig it? You got an art book, Living Loud. You have a docuseries, Fight the Power. So I have to ask, what's next for Chuck D?
I think the Bring the Noise app is probably the thing that's probably making the biggest inroad because it makes all the vehicles run. And like I said, I'm very clear on what I don't do, Jay. It sees all in lines of their artistic expressions, and they're all in line to make sense of what I do. It's no time soon you'll see me trying to, like, you know, be the starting right fielder for the Yankees, and I'll be. I should say the Mets. I end this on closing, man. You know, I'm as being the Major League Baseball ambassador for culture is very important because we're going to try to figure out a game that's so close to my heart, a game that I once seen at Tiger Stadium in your town. Yeah. We've gone into an individual thing, and baseball's the thing that you can't play one-on-one. You got to get together. So there's things culturally we can do with bringing the game closer, adding some things to it, bringing it back into the vision of our neighborhoods and stuff like that. But bringing music to it and being the theme and the soundtrack of it, and I don't take that role lightly. Another thing is to let people know. The other day I said, like, when I was on the stage the other day, 15-20, I said like kind of F Yankee Stadium because of the event. It wasn't because of the event. I was talking about the municipality of it because The biggest statement I'm making is Free Kid Creole. From Grandmaster Blast and the Furious Five, I thought that it was a one-sided case having him serve 16 years for what, essentially from the outside looking in, as a manslaughter charge for self-defense because he was accosted in the streets going home from work.
Right.
So, I mean, he didn't have the legal support. You know, in this country, it's about having legal support or money to support you, and he didn't have it. So I'm actually a president of the Hip Hop Alliance, hip hop's first union, started by Curtis Blow, Harris One, MC Light. And we're trying to make, you know, hip hop 50 years be accountable and responsible and be grown, man. Simple as that, man.
Well, you're a legend. You're an icon. I idolize you. I love and appreciate you, my brother. Can't wait for us to break bread again soon. And I'm forever grateful that you took the time to join me today. That's Chuck D, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, sir. Speaking to an equal legend and influence that permeates to this very second of what you put out there.
Thank you, brother. Thank you. Love.
Last call.
I'd like to thank Chuck D for stopping by the podcast. He is a living, breathing hip-hop historian, and I'm so glad he's continuing to keep the stories of our culture alive through his work. One thing that stuck out to me about Chuck is how he defines the term Renaissance man. He's multidisciplined, a gifted rapper, visual artist, writer, and leader. He's a perfect example that you can be good at many things at the same time, and you don't need to have just one label. So I ask you this, what are the things that you're good at right now? But hold up, I got a follow-up question. What are the things you dream of being good at? Just remember, there's always time, always space in your life to make your dream a reality. And remember, a dream without action is just a wish. So don't just talk about it, be about it. I'm the Renaissance Man. See you next week.